There was a young woman who was a high school junior who got pregnant while she was in school by a young man who ultimately said to her that he had no interest in her or the baby. She decided not to get an abortion, and after some soul searching, she felt that she needed to begin to attend church again. She went back actually to the church that she attended as a young girl, and as she began to go there over the weeks that ensued, she knew in her heart that she had made the right decision. That just so, felt so right in her heart spiritually and relationally, and that she had done the right thing. Thinking about the other girls in the church and how they might benefit from learning from her mistakes, she asked the pastor if she could speak to the middle school girls at his school about the pressures of dating and sex. The pastor said, "No, I would never allow that. I'm afraid you're the type of person that might rub off on them." Even though she felt rejected, she stayed at that church, and a few months later, she had her baby. When she called the pastor to ask him about baptizing her baby, he replied, "This is not going to happen in my church. I would never baptize an illegitimate baby." True story. And you know, that story is a very powerful story. Even as we listen to it, something deep within us cringes at the reality of that and what that woman and what that pastor and that whole church were going through and feeling at that moment. But again, it raises a very important question that I've been raising now for a couple of weeks. And the question is this: does God love us only when we do good? Does God love us only when we do good? Because part of the reality that you and I live within, and I reflected on this with you past week, the week before, was the whole reality of how performance-based our culture is and our lives are as well. People look at us and decide about us and whether they're even going to relate to us or not based on our performance. And one of the truths I want to continue to try to bring home to each one of us again today is that God is love. And that his love for you and me really changes the whole game. In fact, I would say to you here today that as much as we try to make the game of life our game, God created life. And it's his game. And God is inviting us to play by his rules that we might enjoy it fully. But again, we live in this world that's performance-based, very much so. Are you good? Are you bad? Have you been naughty or nice? It's even in our songs. Are you a success or a failure? Are you pretty? Are you ugly? Are you rich? Are you poor? Do you have it together? Or are you a loser? And you know, the reality for you and me and for most people in our world is that's so ingrained within us that's how we live. It's a subconscious thing. It's how we, if you will, live and move and have our being in a very real way. And what we begin to believe is that because everybody judges us in this way, and we're judged at work in this way, and we're judged by other people in this way, and we're judged at church this way, that this must be how God does it. And many believe that God's love for them is based on their performance, based on what they do, whether they're good enough or not good enough. If you do this and this and this, then God will love me. But if you don't do this and this and this, God will hate you and be out to get you. And what you and I need to begin to realize, as I affirm with this truth that you've heard so many times, God is love, as we affirm this, that this whole idea of performance and that we have to earn God's love is really legalism. It's a legalism that the people of Israel, in most of this Bible, lived through in the Old Testament. They had 613 laws that they needed to fulfill. Talk about a checklist. When their feet hit the ground off of their beds in the morning, I would not have wanted to get out of bed in the morning 613 laws. I mean, I have problems with the Ten Commandments, if you know what I mean. 613, I mean, it is just over for me. Forget about it, right? And part of the purpose of the law was to be an example to us that, humanly speaking, we cannot fulfill it. You and I in our own power, you and I through our own human goodness, you and I through our own abilities, whatever they may be or not, do not have a chance to even come close to fulfilling the revealed righteousness of God, which is encapsulated, if you will, in the law. That was the lesson. The lesson was, you can't do it. But we're still continuing to try to do it, to be good enough, to measure up, to do this and this and this, that God might love us. And it's kind of like the guy that's on the outside of his house and he's going to go paint it. And he's up, he got his ladder aligned, he's got his bucket up there with him, and then all of a sudden he realizes he's on the wrong side of the house. It wasn't the side that he wanted to paint. You ever done that before? Yeah, okay, I'll be at least one of the people to raise my hand. And if you have been living your life believing that you have to earn God's love, and it is based on how good you are, you have your ladder on the wrong side of the house. And it's time to move it. It's time to move to the right side of the house. And we hear about the right side of the house this morning in this beautiful story out of Matthew, where we read about how Jesus welcomes sinners. Please turn to that with me this morning, because I'm going to spend a little bit of time with you in Matthew today and going through this about how God is love, and because of that, he welcomes sinners. He welcomes them. And what we see at the beginning of this story is that Jesus is walking along as he does each day in his life during his ministry, and he comes upon Matthew. Now, you have to realize there's all kinds of people Jesus is walking around. He's in a crowd probably. There's people that are following him. And yet Jesus feels drawn to Matthew. You know, a lot of times we only think about this spiritual journey in terms of ourselves, but it's important for us from time to time to think about it from Jesus' point of view. Hello. And from Jesus' point of view this morning in the story, he is drawn to Matthew. The Spirit of God is drawing Jesus to Matthew because the Spirit of God is calling Matthew to follow the Lord. Hear that today. Do you think you're in this church today just because it's a coincidence? Do you think you're a believer following the Lord because it just kind of happened? I would say to you that it wasn't just a coincidence, it was a God incident. That God has been pursuing you for a long, long time. That like Jesus came to Matthew that day on the journey at his tax booth, of all places, at H&R Block in Jerusalem. He wasn't going there to do his taxes, he didn't even have any money, come on. He came to Matthew because it was Matthew's special day. It was time for Matthew to leave his 8-to-5 job, and it was time for Matthew to follow the king. And you see, that's the call. And some of you here today, I mean, God has been moving so powerfully this morning already. And even last night, things that were going on. But if you hear the call today, don't just slough it off. Don't just ignore it. God is coming to your tax booth today and saying, you know what, I want you to follow me. I'm not talking to him. I'm not talking to her. I'm talking to you. I want you to follow me. And so Matthew gets up. He hears the call very clearly. He leaves his day job to follow the Messiah, to follow Jesus Christ. And you know, it's amazing how effective Jesus is in people's lives. He goes up to James and John. They're busy fishing with their dad. He says to anyone, you know, Jesus' call comes at the worst time. You know, these are the guys that are working during their day. You know, doesn't Jesus know I got a schedule to complete and things to do? And he comes to James and John as they're busy helping their father fish, and he says to them, follow me. What do? They drop their nets and they follow him. Just like Matthew. When Matthew hears the call, it's compelling. It's powerful. It draws you. It's like this huge spiritual magnet just saying, come, and you get up and you come. And so Matthew does. And Jesus, of all people, calls a tax collector. Let me just say that in Jesus' day, they were as loved as they are today. In fact, I can say to you that they were probably hated more in Jesus' day than they are today. They were despised. They were considered by the Jews to be traitors. The Jews of Israel at the time of the Roman occupation felt like they were oppressed. They were oppressed by the Romans. They hated that rule. And they especially hated having to give their money to the tax collectors. So it's interesting, as Jesus invites Matthew into his life and on the spiritual journey, guess what happens? Matthew invites Jesus into his life. Guess who's coming to dinner? His name is Jesus. Never showed up in this place before. So Matthew invites Jesus to dinner, and guess who's there? Present were other tax collectors and sinners. Of course that's who was going to be there. All of Matthew's friends, these tax collectors, they all hung out together because nobody wanted to be around them. And Jesus and his disciples are having dinner with a group of tax collectors and sinners. And the Pharisees are mystified by this. They say to his disciples, why does your master do this? Why is he so crazy? We know he's an incredible rabbi. We respect his teaching and his miracles. But why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners of all people? The people that we hate, and the people that even if we're around them, we become unrighteous. Why does he do this, this rabbi of yours? And Jesus overhears them, and he answers their question. And he says, I've come for the sick, not the healthy. I've come for sinners and not the righteous. And that, beloved, in a nutshell, is the heartbeat of the gospel. And each and every day, and each and every moment that you and I will draw breath, and each and every moment that this creation will exist, the heart of Jesus will be seeking to sit down at dinner with a group of tax collectors and sinners to reach them with his love, just like he did for you and for me. And you know, think about that with me for just a moment. What would be the group that you would have the hardest time sitting down to have dinner with? That person or that collection of people that you hate right now. Might be a group of Republicans. Might be a group of Democrats. Could be independents. Could be some of those fundamental Christians or Muslims or whatever the case might be. Could be anyone, could be all from our epistle today. Could be the poor, could be the rich. Oh, there's a lot of people that we struggle with, aren't there? Think about that one group of people that you'd have the hardest time sitting down to have dinner with. Oh, it might be pretty quiet during that whole meal. That's the group. That's the group that Jesus desires to sit down with. With you. And for you and me, if that is so hard to comprehend, that God's love would be so extravagant and incredible that he would even reach out to people like that, I would just invite you along with me later on tonight before you go to bed to just take a stop by your mirror and look in it. And look at the person staring back at you and realize that he has been just as merciful to you and me as he seeks to be merciful to them. Brennan Manning writes of this text, "Here is the revelation, bright as the evening star. Jesus comes for sinners, for those as outcast as tax collectors, and for those caught up in squalid choices and failed dreams. He comes for corporate executives, street people, superstars, farmers, hookers, addicts, IRS agents, AIDS victims, and even used car salesmen." This is a merciful God, let me tell you. This passage should be read, reread, and memorized, because every Christian generation has tried to dim the brightness of its meaning because the gospel seems too good to be true. And as you and I begin to be grasped by this gospel, as you and I begin to have a revelation about the greatness and the goodness and the generousness and the loveliness of God, that it is so much greater and so much bigger and so much more than you and I had even began to comprehend, then you and I are beginning to get a glimpse. We're beginning to get a glimpse of the glory of God. We're beginning to get a glimpse of the loveliness of God. We're beginning to get a glimpse of who it is exactly that we're coming here to worship week after week. This strange yearning deep in our hearts that has continued to draw us. As we begin to understand and see this, we're beginning to see Him. The one young woman that I shared with you about at the beginning of my message, she ended up at another church, thank God. And her child was baptized soon after she had gotten there. She worked with young people. She finished her education. And she eventually went into mission work. Currently, she and her daughter live and work as missionaries in Africa. How wonderful. How beautiful. How Jesus. And you see, God's love transforms us. Just as you are, weak, broken, sinful, no hope. Everybody's given up on you, maybe even including yourself. Just as you are right now, maybe successful, doing great. Talked to somebody the other day who was rich, had it all. And he said he kept on waking up day after day saying to himself, "Is this all there is?" He had it all. He got the gold ring that everybody's looking for. Let me tell you somebody who already got the gold ring, when he got it, said, "Is there anything more to life?" It's because he wasn't created for the gold ring. He was created for the King of Kings. Just as you are today, come to Him. Just as you are, wherever you are, come to Him. His strength will be made perfect in your weakness. Your questions will be answered in His love. You don't have to have it all together. I got to tell you this too. During the Bible study, I've been sharing about the goodness and generosity and love of God over these past few weeks. And this person has been listening to these messages, and this person shared with us, "You know what? I'm having a hard time receiving God's love because I'm not worthy. I feel like I got to do something to get God's love." And I'm so glad that this person shared this with me, because I've been getting a sense that some of you have struggled with this message. It's like, "Well, Father Joe, what do I got to do? I got to be good enough to receive this, and you're still not hearing me." You see my ears here? Listen to me. Listen to me. Listen to the Holy Spirit right now, because He's really speaking. You can't earn it. You were never meant to earn Him. You were never meant to deserve Him. He came because He loves us. And he wants us in relationship with him. And he invites us to come today. So I invite you here today to maybe for the first time in your life to not only hear that message, but to receive that message. And to receive Jesus, to receive this God of love, to be able to say in the depth of your heart, God's love, please transform me. I don't deserve it. I'm not worthy of it. There's no way I'm ever going to earn it, but by gosh, I'm going to receive it. This is the best gift that I could ever be given, and I'm going to say yes to him today. Just as you are. Just as you are in this moment, let us come to him and receive of his love.